Daybreak on BizNews is proudly brought to you by Bonitas, the medical aid for South Africa.
Good morning and welcome to the BizNews Daybreak. Today is Tuesday, the 7th of July. I'm Kerry Lanigan. First up, we've got the latest overnight news from our partners at Bloomberg.
A Qatari liquefied natural gas tanker has been attacked as it exited the Strait of Hormuz. A fire broke out on the ship after it was struck near the Omani coast with what is believed to have been a drone or missile. Separately, Axios reports that Iran fired at least two missiles at commercial ships travelling through the strait. According to an unidentified US official, both vessels suffered significant damage, but there were no casualties. Stuart Livingston Wallace heads our coverage of the Middle East.
I think the big readout from this is that Iran is absolutely determined to enforce its right to control Hormuz. What was interesting about the location of this is that it appeared to be taking the southern route via the Omani coast, which Iran has clearly said is not acceptable as far as it's concerned. All ships must go through Iranian waters or hugging the Iranian coast, and any that don't are subject to attack. So that reinforces that. Again, I think it makes it very difficult for negotiators going forward in terms of trying to get some sort of agreement about what actually happens to Hormuz in the future.
Stuart Livingston Wallace says talks between Washington and Tehran are currently suspended as Iran holds a multi-day funeral ceremony for the late Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei.
Shares in Samsung have fallen by more than 8% after the firm's 19-fold profit increase failed to match lofty expectations. Korea's largest company posted preliminary operating income equivalent to around $58 billion in the 3 months through to June. That beat projections by about 6%, and it amounts to a roughly 1,800% increase in profits from a year earlier. Bloomberg's Anthony Stephens says that even with that massive beat, investors are still opting to rotate out of tech stocks.
You're seeing, you know, very high volatility and very high positioning getting unwound here on what is, on the face of it, a very strong result. And that points to more of like a technical or tactical selling here, which is leading to some rotation. So Samsung is down strongly, so is Kioxia, so is Hynix. And this speaks to the fact that the memory trade has been the big, but also the most liquid way to play the AI hardware infrastructure build out.
Anthony Stephens referring there to increasing market concerns that the AI-driven rally may have run ahead of itself. However, even with the latest sell-off, Samsung's shares are still up around 150% this year. A recent rebound for European defence stocks faces a test at this week's NATO summit as investors seek clarity on member states' spending plans. The prospect of additional funding has lifted a Goldman Sachs basket of European defence names to its highest point in just over a month, following a 2026 low at the end of June. Ivo Dulder, former US ambassador to NATO and senior fellow at Harvard, says the summit is unlikely to yield groundbreaking announcements.
I think what everybody is hoping for is that it will be a quiet meeting, much like the G7 a few weeks ago. Perhaps some good news on the question of support for Ukraine, but no real fireworks. That is now where the bar is set. We're now no longer looking towards NATO or these summit meetings to fundamentally change the direction of the alliance. The best thing that can be hoped for is that the alliance lives another day.
Ivo Dulder there, speaking to Bloomberg, the former US ambassador to NATO. Defence stocks have trailed the broader European market this year, rising just 3.4% amid doubts over how much of the military spending promised by governments will actually materialise. US President Donald Trump is likely to put more pressure on other nations to boost defence spending to 5% of annual economic output at the two-day event in Ankara.
Former Johannesburg Mayor Herman Mashaba pushes back hard on claims that his administration left the city's finances in disarray. The full interview with Chris Stain is on biznews.com.
Now, Dada Marrero has gone and blamed you, your stewardship, for the city's financial issues.
Well, unfortunately, Dada Marrero forgets that the city of Johannesburg is audited by the Auditor General. And I challenge anyone to really look at the city of Johannesburg during the 3 years as the mayor, more especially the last 3 years. The first year, they made life difficult for me. You remember they used to collapse government, to get closer to SACP, the leadership, every time to disrupt the council meetings and so forth. But because I was determined, I'm not an easy person to be pushed. By the third year, in 2019, please just look at the numbers of the city of Johannesburg. In 2019, the last year when I resigned, we were literally having record-breaking revenue collection. And it wasn't happening because of luck. It was happening because I had put measures in place. I had the right MMC of finance. I had the right Section 59 the person to run the finances of the city. I was after all the illegal connection. I was after corruption, 35 billion rands of fraud and corruption. During that period, we discovered using technology that the ANC and the corruption, they had taken over 2,000 properties from the city's billing system. Over 2,000. And I shared this with society. I said, these are the problems. But we were bringing them in. We were making them make pay from the day they were removed from the system and they start paying properties. Half a billion rents a property, you find it in our books, it's valued at 50 million rents. So these are things that this didn't happen by chance.
Veteran political columnist William Saunderson Mayer gives his assessment of the damage John Steenhuisen has done to himself, to Tony Leon, and to the DA's brand. Listen to the full interview on today's BizNews Daily Edge.
I think the damage is enormous. We'll only know when the social the polling research is done. There are two possibilities. I think firstly, there's a huge sense that. And this is how the DA and organizations like News 24 were very sympathetic to the ANC. This is how the ANC and its supportive media are pitching it. John Steenhuisen has revealed that the DA is no different from the ANC. It's exploitative. It's fundamentally dishonest. It is open to engaging in state capture. So the squeaky clean image of the DA, which is utterly essential to its persona, to its brand, its brand rests on, has been tainted by Steenhuisen. Now there is a possibility that people who do vote for the DA or would have voted for the DA will put this down to just a spat between personalities, that it's sound in theory, it signifies nothing, and that would be the best that the DA can hope for. But my sense is, it is damaging. It's destructive to his career. It's destructive to the DA. He has done huge damage to Tony Leon's professional reputation and to the reputation of his business. Even although the allegations are laughable, but in politics it doesn't matter. You take the tar brush, fling it about generously, and some of the tar will stick. It'd be interesting to see what happens out of that. No one, I think, in the DA, including Leon and Hill Lewis, want this to continue. They would like to put it behind them as quickly as possible. And that means making a deal of some kind with Steenhuisen.
Healthcare matters, but what matters most?
Having cover for the people who keep this business going.
Bonitas is there for you when it comes. Bonitas, medical aid for South Africa. Visit bonitas.co.za and find your plan.
Forensic investigator Paul O'Sullivan exposes a sophisticated new online scam targeting South Africans, one that preys specifically on people who have already lost money to fraud. Check out biznews.com for more.
It looks fairly legitimate, but it's clearly not. How we know it's not legitimate is I ran a few checks on it, and they're using different methods to market their scam. And they post on TikTok and Instagram and Facebook a picture and it says, victim of an online investment scam. Professional compliant legal support. And then it says, SA residents only. And the one called themselves Premier Financial Consultants. Another one called themselves Professional Anti-Fraud Lawyer Team. Another one, they market themselves as Crypto or Forex Fraud, Confidential Legal Assistance for South African Residents Only. And then it says things like lost money due to online fraud. And they refer to Love Trap, Job Search Fraud, Virtual Currency, Stock Fraud. So I thought, okay, I'll give them a run for their money. So I clicked on it where it says learn more. And then a set of questions came up and I put fake answers in. And I put one of my pseudonym email addresses in. I have a few email addresses where people would not necessarily link that email address to me. And then what happened was I got unsolicited, first of all, phone call. And the person who phoned me claimed to be working for the Financial Conduct Authority in London. That's quite interesting because what he's done is he's taken the, and by the way, it's a UK WhatsApp number. He calls himself William Samuel Colvin. It's obviously not him. When I speak to him on the phone, he sounds like he's Eastern European. It definitely doesn't sound like a William Samuel Colvin. And then on his WhatsApp logo, he's using the FCA, or his WhatsApp profile, he's using the Financial Conduct Authority's logo for that. So I decided to play him along a bit, and I said, no, but how do I know you are who you are? And then this guy, crazy, you know, he sends me a photograph of an ID badge lying on a desk next to a computer keyboard. Now, I happen to know people in the Financial Conduct Authority in the UK, so I reached out to them and I said, look what's going on. They're using your logo and, you know, your ID badges. And the guys were shocked. So the reality of the situation is, they then looking for information from me, and I've had to pretend that I'm a victim of an online fraud, and they pretty much guarantee that they'll get me all my money back, which is far too good to be true. The reality of the situation is it's impossible for anybody, even a Financial Conduct Authority, to guarantee that you're going to get all your money back. In most of the cases that we've dealt with, and we've dealt with a few of these online fraud scams, if the people don't move fast, they don't see their money again, not even one rand of it. So I've since referred this matter to the police in the UK, the Serious Fraud Office in London, because they're using UK telephone numbers and they're using the Financial Conduct Authority in London as their means of existence. But what's interesting about it is that they're targeting victims. They're targeting people that have already been a victim of an online fraud.
And finally, Bloomberg reports on the $2 trillion global race to master the weapons of future battlefields: drones, hypersonics, and AI.
As President Trump pressures NATO allies to boost defense spending, a new arms race is then taking place. Countries are pouring billions into attempts to be the first to master drones, hypersonic weapons, AI, and other emerging technologies. The $2 trillion race for the control of future battlefields is the subject of today's Big Take story. And Jerry Doyle, Bloomberg's global defense editor, is one of the names attached to the story. Jerry, give us a sense then of the size and the scale of the spending spree that we're seeing being undertaken.
Well, globally, countries are pouring north of $2 trillion into this sort of effort. The U.S. alone is pledging to spend $1.5 trillion in its next defense budget, a large percentage of that is going to go to new and emerging technologies like this. And it's kind of a rich country's game at this point. Obviously, it takes a lot of money to get involved in these new technologies, especially on the space side. But there's certainly opportunities for other countries that are able to invest in something like AI that might be able to get to a breakthrough first.
Yes. And where does advantage lie then, Jerry, in this? Is it just in who's got the deepest pockets, who can afford to spend the most? Or is it about very recent battlefield experience, which some countries, sadly, of course, have?
I think it's a mixture of the two. Obviously, the more resources you have to put into research and development, the more results you're going to get. And especially, again, in areas like space, where you need to put satellites in orbit. Satellites are extremely expensive to make. Rockets are extremely expensive and difficult to make. Getting in that game, very expensive. On the other hand, artificial intelligence just requires some land, some power, some data centers. Chips, obviously, are hard to come by. In terms of who has the advantage right now, it sort of depends on the technology. You know, Russia, China, United States all have hypersonic weapons in their inventory, but Russia is the only country that has been using those in combat in its invasion of Ukraine. On the other hand, in the air campaign against Iran, the U.S. says that it used artificial intelligence to help plan those strikes. So it's operationalized that already. The impact of that, how well it worked, remains to be seen. But those examples of how things are actually being used on the battlefield may show us an idea of who has the edge at this point.
That's it for this morning's BizNews Daybreak. I'm Kerry Lanigan. Thanks for listening.
Daybreak on BizNews is proudly brought to you by Bonitas, the medical aid for South Africa.